Welcome to the University of Michigan Press Podcast, a monthly show featuring interviews with University of Michigan Press authors.
Alanz Dobbins has been a lightning rod for cultural discussion and criticism his entire career. In A Critic's Journey, he takes on his own Jewish and Hispanic upbringing with an autobiographical focus and his typical flair with words, exploring the relationship between the two cultures from his own and also others' experiences. Stavins has been hailed as a voice for Latino culture thanks to his Hispanic upbringing, but as a Jew and a Caucasian, he's also an outsider to that culture, something that's sharpened his perspective and some of his critics' swords. In this book of essays, he looks at the creative process from that point of view, exploring everything from the translation of Don Quixote to the Hispanic anti-Semitism and the Holocaust in Latin America. Alanz Dobbins is Lewis Sebring Professor in Latin American and Latino Culture and Five College 40th Anniversary Professor at Amherst College. He has written and edited numerous books, and the award-winning movie My Mexican Cheva was based on one of his stories. Hello, Professor Dobbins.
Hello.
So how do you define yourself? Latino, Jewish, or American? Or do you define yourself at all?
Well, I'm very interested in issues of identity, as you know, but these categories aren't really mutually exclusive. At one point, I can be Latino. At another point, I can be Jewish or American, or I can be the three at the same time. Identity, in my way of seeing, is really a house of mirrors. It depends on the perspective. It depends on the time and the circumstance.
Well, so in Who Owns the English Language, you talk about the way English has spread across the globe. What opportunities and disadvantages has that spread brought us?
Well, English is the most elastic, vital, dynamic language in the world today. It is a colonial language, an imperial language, that it spreads all over at very rapid speed. A healthy language that is always absorbing from the environment words and terms and devices, and at the same time giving other languages in equal measure. And yet what is interesting about English is that as it conquers the world, as it establishes itself as the most needed, the most useful language, it is also undergoing rapid change, not only abroad, but mainly and particularly here at home in the United States, as it is changing in other places where it is also at home, Canada and New Zealand and England. But particularly in the United States, English is a language that is undergoing all sorts of transformations. My own interest as it relates to this topic is with Spanglish, the interface between English and Spanish. There are 45 to 48 million Latinos in the United States. Many of us speak a variety of Spanish that is no longer pure, no longer pristine, and instead mixes all sorts of words and devices a way of switching codes that results in something that is called Spanglish. When I first arrived as an immigrant into this country, this hybrid of, form of communication really was something that repelled me. I thought it was an announcement of how Spanish was being destroyed and how English wasn't really being adopted by the Latino immigrants. But as time has gone by, I have really fallen in love and become a passionate student of the development of this phenomenon of Spanglish. It seems to me that it announces a new way of using the English language that is not only pertaining Latinos here in the United States, but non-Latinos as well, and will ultimately define the fashion in which we use the English language abroad, especially in Latin America, a region of the globe that has roughly 400 million Spanish speakers, and that through the media are being influenced by this Spanglish, this variety of English maybe, or this form of communication that is becoming independent and having its own self, and that is coloring what Shakespeare's language is all about today.
In Betraying Latino Students, you discuss the abysmal enrollment by Latino students in prestigious colleges. What steps could we take to start correcting that problem?
Well, it seems to me that there are a number of different steps that are in store. First, it is crucial that we see Latinos as an integral part and an integral element of American society and not as a marginal group that needs to be approached in terms of quotas. Latinos are, as other immigrant groups, playing a crucial role in the shaping of the United States, and they should not be given any special treatment. They are active participants. Second, I think Latino culture needs also to be understood as diverse, heterogeneous. There are Cuban Americans, Mexican Americans, Puerto Ricans in the mainland that make that Latino culture, and it is crucial for the non-Latino to realize that Latino culture is diverse, and this is very important, that it is also part, an active part of the curriculum that we teach in these colleges. In other words, it's not only that we bring Latino students, but that the topic of Latinidad, Latino-ness, is incorporated into the curriculum. Third, I would say that we need to rethink the strategies that we have in teaching Spanish in the United States, in colleges and universities, particularly in colleges where that attract a large Latino population. Spanish so far has been taught as a foreign language, and I think on campus, and I think that it is time for us to awaken to the reality that Spanish is not a foreign language in this country. It is not like German or French or Italian. It is a domestic language, a native language. It has been spoken here for a long time. And the needs of the students that are coming to Spanish departments need to be addressed in a realistic fashion. Many of them already come from Spanish-speaking homes. They are what we describe as heritage speakers. And we cannot make them feel that the Spanish that they have learned with their families is unworthy or unnecessary or not valuable enough to be considered as part of their ancestry. It is very important that we teach Spanish on campus as a language that is playing a crucial role in the shaping of the national identity in this country. Fourth, I would say that Latinos should not be represented in substantial numbers at the student level, in substantial numbers at the student level, but we need to make important changes at the administrative and at the faculty levels, and more crucially at the leadership level. I think that it is time to have more Latino presidents of small and big colleges and universities, not because they are Latinos, but because they are good candidates. But the fact that they are Latinos is an important ingredient in that it makes them perceive the culture of a particular geographical background in this country, say in Florida or in Texas or New Mexico or Arizona or California, as connected with the needs of that particular institution. And I think that when we look at all these things together, we will realize that this American society has been changing dramatically. The growth of the Latino population is already reshaping the way we look at things, and we have to make every effort possible to reflect, to make the campus reflect the changes that the society has undergone in the last 30, 40, 50 years.
So, very little is taught in mainstream classes about the impact of the Holocaust on Latin America. What makes those countries unique in terms of the results of the war? How have they been affected by it?
It's a very good question and an important one. For many years, the Holocaust has been taught on campus as having been having defined mainly Europe and the creation of the State of Israel and American Jewry. But the Holocaust had also an impact on other parts of the world, and recently scholars have been pushing to enlarge the spectrum of Holocaust studies. In Latin America, these efforts are only in their infancy. There have been a number of different scholars that have begun to study, for instance, the refugee waves, both of former Nazis to places like Brazil and Paraguay and Chile and Argentina, and also concentration camp survivors that ended up quite often in those very same landscapes, and even in identical neighborhoods at some point in, say, Santiago de Chile or Buenos Aires, a former Nazi and a camp survivor would be living in the same neighborhood, sometimes in the same block. It is also important to start reflecting on the role that some of these Latin American countries, Mexico, Argentina, for instance, played militarily during the war, and also as safe havens for people that were running away for political reasons and for humanitarian reasons. I think that the Holocaust is a story that shaped Latin America, Latin American Jewry, and it is high time that we start paying attention to the impact that it had in that region of the world.
Your essay, Don Quixote at 400, describes the circumstances of the Great Knight's Tale. What impact has that work had on society, in your view?
I am just hypnotized by Don Quixote. I think it's the best novel ever written. Certainly it's my favorite. I have read it and reread it numerous times. I teach it constantly, and I own in my personal library a very large collection of Quixote books. Sometimes they are scholarly, and more frequently, they are translations of Don Quixote into all sorts of languages, in particular into the English language. I own first editions, almost of every one of the 21 full-fledged translations of Don Quixote into Shakespeare's tongue. I think Don Quixote is what Hamlet, or Shakespeare says in Hamlet, a mirror to nature. There are all sorts of elements in it that have shaped Western civilization, the way we look at individual freedom, the way we look at democracy and tolerance and pluralism, and particularly mental illness. This is a novel that has, in many ways, helped us construct our identity as Westerners. And I am simply fascinated by the way the English language translations, published in different times from, you know, the very first one, when not even the second part of Don Quixote in Spanish had been published — English is the first language into which Don Quixote was translated — to the very recent one, just 1 or 2 years ago in its release, have been able to reflect the changes of perception of foreigners to Spain, or of people to what Don Quixote represents. There is a Victorian Don Quixote and an Elizabethan and a modern and a postmodern and so on and so forth. So I think that the attractiveness of this 400 years that we celebrated not too long ago in 2005 of Don Quixote is that it has enabled us to see the accumulated readings and misreadings that the novel has generated among readers worldwide.
Thank you so much, Professor Stavins, for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for your time.
We have been speaking with Alon Stavins, author of A Critic's Journey.
To learn more about our books, please visit us on the web at press.umich.edu. This podcast has been brought to you by the University of Michigan Press, copyright 2008, all rights reserved.